Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Third Coast Podcast. I'm Katie Mingle. You'll hear our weekly radio show, Resound, here, as well as the occasional story curated recently from our audio library at thirdcoastfestival.org. The Third Coast Festival is a nonprofit organization whose livelihood depends in part on support from listeners like you. To find out how you can help, or to check out all of the cool stuff we do apart from our radio show, visit our website, thirdcoastfestival.org. Thanks, and enjoy the podcast.
From the Third Coast International Audio Festival in Chicago, I'm Gwen Maxey, and this is Resound. Resound is a remix of music, documentaries, found sound, sound bites, and little sonic symphonies we find all over the world. On the air, the internet, we listen to everything we can get our ears on and bring you the best of what we hear each week on Resound.
Lisa, we'd like to add our welcome aboard Frontier Airlines Airbus A319.
There you are, sitting on a plane, bags are stowed, seats and tray tables are in their upright and locked positions, but the plane is delayed, and you aren't going anywhere anytime soon. An hour passes, then two, then three. And just as everyone starts to feel like they can't take another minute, this happens.
They will play for you by the composer Dvorak, the string quartet called American, Movement.
Fellow passengers, who happen to be members of the Philadelphia Orchestra, create what might be called a pop-up performance and save the day. Symphonies are all around us. If we're open to them, they will play for us. Musician Joseph Bertolozzi hears music in physical structures, like the Eiffel Tower. So he plays them like a giant percussion set with drumsticks and mallets. Here he is playing the Mid-Hudson Suspension Bridge in New York. Today on Resound, we bring you symphony stories found in unusual places, like, say, British supermarkets, Russian cityscapes, and the wilds of the animal kingdom. Stay with us. Folk singer turned nature recordist Bernie Krause spends his days listening to the natural environment. He has a library of 35,000 hours of nature recordings to show for it. And while doing all that listening, he came up with a theory that animals communicate with each other on their own frequencies or channels, and together these conversations, like staffs on a score, interact just like a symphony orchestra. And everything is in perfect harmony until we humans start making too much noise. He calls his theory biophony.
One evening, I was sitting there listening to these sounds, and it occurred to me that these sounds were kind of symphonic, that all of the voices, all of the insect voices and the mammal voices and the frog voices, all of these critters had found channels to vocalize in without their voices being masked by other creatures.
That's the biologist, Bernie Kraus. He's describing his theory of biophony. It's literally a combination of biology and symphony. But he wasn't always a scientist. 2 decades before he began studying biology, Bernie Kraus was a guitarist and folk singer.
After I graduated college, I joined a group called the Weavers. We introduced a song called Guantanamera.
After the Weavers broke up, Kraus moved to California. It was the early 60s and the psychedelic scene was about to break open. Kraus began experimenting with a new electronic keyboard, the Moog synthesizer. In 1967, he and a friend set up a tent at the Monterey Pop Festival, and they sold the Moog to big-name bands.
Like the Monkees and the Birds, all animal sounds, the Beatles. We also sold to the Doors and Frank Zappa.
But the Moog wasn't easy to use.
Because most of these groups were so stoned all the time, they couldn't play the synthesizer. They couldn't figure out how to make it work. Strange
days. The Moog became so popular, Kraus ended up getting work outside the music scene. He started designing sound for Hollywood movies, like Rosemary's Baby and Apocalypse Now.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
I did about a third of the music and the helicopter sounds. And also, I got fired 8 times.
But every time director Francis Ford Coppola fired him, he rehired him for twice the pay.
Smells like victory.
At least you know the risks when you're working with animals.
Kraus hadn't spent much time with animals up to this point. But then a friend of his suggested he make a concept album about ecology.
I didn't know what ecology was at the time. I thought the wild was the zoo. What did I know?
But he ended up making that album and called it In a Wild Sanctuary. It mixed rock music with sounds he recorded at the San Francisco Zoo and the Pacific Ocean.
Being out there for the first time with earphones on, that was the moment that I decided I wanted to be outdoors instead of in, and I wanted to figure out a way in my life to do that however long I was going to live.
So Kraus got his PhD in biology and became a bioacoustician, someone who records the sounds of nature. He started by going to far-off places like Antarctica, Borneo, and the Amazon.
I heard this growl in my headphones. We had kind of sensed that something was following us down the trail anyway, because we could smell the urine of the animal. We couldn't hear it or see it, though. But boy, when I set up my mics, I sure heard it. I was frozen solid. It was just terrifying.
But Kraus's notion that nature operates on a symphonic spectrum has its critics. Some biologists are skeptical that animals choose to jump onto specific frequencies. And as to whether biophony has practical uses?
Well, for one thing, it's being used as an analgesic in medicine to calm patients down, lower their stress levels, wean them off pain medication.
Bernie Kraus sees his research as activism. When man-made noises interfere with a segment of the spectrum and suddenly animals can't communicate, they die out. His own sound library reflects the disappearing ecosystem.
Over 40% of that collection comes from habitats that are now virtually extinct. 40% of that library comes from sounds you can't hear anymore.
An example of this is Kraus's recording of Lincoln Meadow at Yuba Pass, California. Here it is before the forest was logged. Listen to Kraus's recording 1 year after logging. The density of the ecosystem has been greatly reduced. Kraus says the mating call of a warbler or the warning call of a cricket is like a soloist in a symphony orchestra.
If you think what a musical score looks like, that's the kind of vision that I had in my head as a result of listening to this stuff.
But this stuff won't last forever. And Kraus says there's only one way to appreciate what we've got now.
Quiet down. Be quiet. And the other thing is, just listen.
Biophony was produced by Jill Dubov for Studio 360's Science and Creativity series and originally aired on WNYC in New York. And now, from the heart of the jungle to the aisles of the Piggly Wiggly. Composer and radio producer Nina Perry found beauty, musicality, and stories in a place that might surprise you. The grocery store. In these shops, where most of us rush in and out, heads down, lists in hand, Nina stopped to listen. And she heard a supermarket symphony.
When we come into work, it's still dark in the morning.
The night team are finishing off, filling the shop, clearing all the cages off.
It's peaceful. And the shop is fairly quiet.
So you can gather some of your own thoughts. And it's like you're just waiting.
And the lights all change because we have night lights and then the lights for the show, you see, for the customers. And you get announced, could you clear the aisles, please? It's getting towards 7 o'clock.
Yeah, I do the newspapers, get them all set out and ready.
There is a countdown. And when you hear these announcements, 5 to 7, 5 to 7, it's a bit like actors being called to dressing rooms, 5 minutes, 5 minutes.
And then I do chocolates and chewing gum.
4 minutes, 3 minutes.
And then when I've done all that, I go on till.
Right, we're opening the store now, and these shutters go up, so it is very showy, really. You could be at the theatre on Drury Lane, I suppose.
Yeah,
please. Or my granddaughter doing that if I don't. This is thing to die for, Red Leicester, but it's aged. My name's Michael, and I'm 75. I serve on the cheese counter. Well, my favourite cheese, actually, this is the one, we haven't cut any yet, is dolce latte. I don't eat a lot of it myself. We only have it in our house when we're having some friends to dinner. And then a bit gets left over and my wife says, you're eating it. So, well, of course I'm eating it. The customers imagine that I've sold cheese all my life, you see, and they think I've worked for Sainsbury's all my life, which I haven't. I've had other lives. And I started working in this supermarket about 7 years ago because I was virtually made to retire from what I was doing. And I thought, well, I'm fit, and do you need the money or want the money? I suppose want some extra money. So it's a retirement job. Well, it doesn't make sense, does it, if you're retired? But retirement is not in my vocabulary. People do say to me, why aren't you retired? I say, well, why should I be?
In my area. My name is Maria. I work in Tesco's Kensington. I've worked here for the last 12 and a half years, and I used to be a manager, but now I work for stock control. I need to make sure that we don't have any gaps on the shelves.
As you see, we've got red labels, which literally telling our customer that we're temporarily out of stock.
When you're a mum and you're just basically at home, most of your day you've only got your child to speak to. I needed more. I decided it was time for me to go out and start doing some work. I'd look forward to go out shopping because it would take me out of the house. It was a way of interact with people, actually communicate more with people. Yeah, I made a choice that that's what I wanted to do.
Thanks, Maria.
And generally, like, customers ask questions all the time. My name's Bev, and I'm the customer services manager here in Tesco's in Kensington. I look after the customers in the shop to make sure that they can get what they want or if they've got any gripes with anything. Hi, guys. How's things going today? Yeah? What special offers have we got?
All the salmon.
They're all individual people and they all have their own individual needs. How are you?
I'm okay.
You okay, yeah?
Yeah, all right.
How's things?
Things good.
Yeah?
Some of our customers are like in the situation that I was, and they come to our store to sort of make friends and somebody that they can talk to. And not only for the shopping, but for the communication that they obviously don't have being alone at home.
How are you today? I said, how are you today?
Fine, I think.
You think? Last time you looked in the mirror, yeah? It was fine.
Well, things change.
That's true. Especially during the course of the day. It can get worse or it can get better.
I was an actor when I was 16, and I came to London to study acting, but my father suggested I get a job in an hotel, because you'll need to eat. I fell in love with the job I'd been given in an hotel, which was a training manager. So I decided then to pursue a catering career. So I was 6 years, I was an executive with one company, another 6 years with another. I worked for Eric D. Morley, so I'm well used to Miss World, Miss England, Miss United Kingdom. I remember one night in Manchester, this driver came and picked me up and he said, where are we off to tonight? I said, I'm having to have dinner with Miss World. He said, oh, that's wonderful. I said, well, not really, because it's my night off and I'd rather be having dinner with my wife. And I thought, I don't want to be an executive anymore. We came back to London and I worked at the Ritz and at Duke's Hotel. And then 6 years at the Garrick Club, and that's where I was able to do after theatre suppers. So there we are. I see the excitement of having dinner with Miss World, I see the excitement of meeting the Queen is exactly the same excitement I get. Am I so odd that I get working on the cheese cart?
Pasta sauces. What's on offer? 2 for £3.
I find it quite therapeutic to go get my trolley and go round and pick my things.
Eggs, this way.
My name is Pat Brown. I'm the parish priest at the Catholic Church in Pimlico, right in the centre of London, and I'm also the Catholic duty priest at Parliament.
2 for £1, hot cross buns, yeah?
Just to have the leisure to speak to people as I meet them. It's always funny because they say, what are you doing here? And I say, well, doing the same you are, I'm shopping. They've only seen me, many of them, in church, and they don't think you've got to eat or the fact you might have to shop.
And, of course, occasionally I have a nice bottle of wine. Oh, they say, a party.
Going to the shops, but still I have to go. Well, I don't really want to go at the start, because this happens with a lot of things, but then I go and it's actually quite fun. It's like sometimes I don't want to get in the bath, but then I stay in there for ages because I keep wanting to play. Hello, I'm trying to think like what Mum would buy, so I wouldn't want to really buy what Mum always buys, because she buys things that sometimes I don't really like. If I didn't have a shopping list, I'd probably think first dinners, because I do still like to have a dinner. Sometimes if I don't have a dinner, I might not be hungry for it, but it feels sometimes a bit odd. Sometimes I can go up to like different people on the counter, and some can be like really nice. Some will be nice, but they can be sometimes a bit quiet and they won't talk as much, because there are some people at the counter that are a bit like me, like to talk a lot.
Right, darling, you've got £6.46 change.
Can I have £1
coins,
please?
Right. 1, 2, 3, 4.
When I was preaching a few years ago, I was trying to get across that our actions and even our moods and our way of approaching the day has an effect on other people. You know, like if you get on the bus and the bus driver's very bad temper and he says, hurry up, come on. That annoys you, and you get on and you moan to the persons beside you, and you go into work and you moan to them. It's like throwing a pebble into a pool and it goes out and out. It works the other way as well. If somebody's very cheerful, that gets you off to a good start. So in trying to get this across, I mentioned, without mentioning her name, but everybody knew who I was talking about, Julie at the supermarket, because she's always so cheerful. Hello, love. Everybody's greeted with a smile and a lot of banter. Oh, there's the lovely Julie. You all right, Julie? I've been talking about you. Hi, Mary.
I've just all nice.
Well, most of it. Except the bit about your funeral.
Oh, well, I want to be cremated.
You want to be cremated, OK.
Oh, I'm going to be a man.
Are you?
Yeah.
When?
In August.
Brilliant.
My name's Julie, and I work for Sainsbury's. With people, I won't judge anyone different. I treat everyone the same equally. The way I am with one person is the way I'd be with all customers. You know, I'm quite a happy-go-lucky type person and chatty, and I'll address everyone the same. Not everyone can be friendly. Not everyone's going to be jolly. You know, you don't know what sort of day they've woke up to in the morning. They could have their reasons for being the way they are. You can't judge them on it. I remember once, actually, they were quite posh people, right, a man and a woman, and they'd come into the store this couple of years ago, and I think they'd had some big row. They were really having a big argument. And they'd come to my till, and they're quite a big shop, and, like, again, I was packing and chatting, and then by the time they left, they said, do you know what? You have made us feel so good, we're going to go home and make love. People say, how come you're always so happy? I don't know. I'm sure on these days I'm miserable. But I think that it would be very rare. It's just the way I am. I like to have a laugh and a joke.
Do you have a Mexico?
No, I don't have a Mexico. I don't do cards.
Not even playing cards.
Oh,
oh, that's about my limit and all.
There is a beauty in someone not just doing a job and or doing it like a machine grumpily, but treating every customer as a unique individual. And she seems to know an awful lot of people, and she knows them by name and they know her. And this is true of many of the other cashiers there in the supermarket in Pimlico as well. So that there is a beauty in that, and it brings shopping to another level, if you like, a human encounter.
This time there you can feel the store getting busier from where it was this morning, so quiet, you can start to hear like children about, and the checkout's a lot more busier, you know, so you can start to feel it starting to buzz a bit.
Going around the shop now has actually made my tummy a bit rumbly. Ooh, that looks nice.
I love it. The busier, the better.
Give me the queues, give me the big trolleys, I'm in my glory. Boom, 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 I'll get for it, no sweat.
I probably mostly like the sherbet ones, but I don't really have them anymore because I try to cut down on my sweets.
Boom, boom, boom.
They invite you to come and have a look at them because they're all different colours and they say things that you probably sometimes think, ooh, that looks nice.
The bigger the trolley, the better. Come to me, I say. Come to me, I say.
Ooh, that looks nice.
Come to me, I say.
The power drink. But Mummy never really wants me to get them because I have enough power. And Mummy sometimes thinks when I get home, I'll probably go climbing the walls.
When I was a manager, I was a dairy manager. We were having a refit in the store, and I was told that on that Sunday to expect a gentleman. And he had 15 of my fridges on wheels, basically. As soon as the customers were gone and the store was completely shut, I got a knock on the door, and it was him arriving with all them fridges. And that's the first time I met my future husband-to-be. I've been on my own for 3 years, at least 3 years. I had a bad experience, so I really wasn't in the line of looking for somebody. But I don't know what happened. It's just when he introduced himself to me and I shaked his hand, I had this really, like, tingly feeling inside me, basically. And I saw it clicked.
Again, it's about human encounters and relationships and building up relationships. So, yeah, there are opportunities there. Maybe somebody you haven't seen in church for a long time, you discover maybe they've been mugged and they're only getting on their feet again, or they've been in hospital and I didn't know that. Or they were going through a period of doubt about their faith and stayed away for a bit. But they take the moment, they feel they're on neutral ground in the supermarket, and you're on neutral ground, and very often they'll open up to you easier there than they would within the church building or outside the church building. And you see people having lots of good chats there and have a good old gossip and catching up on the news.
This lady, she moved house yesterday, but she's kind of forgotten how to get back to it. Did you say 13X?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll pop around to make sure you got home.
She just showed it to me. I said, oh, I said it's 13X.
Yeah, okay. 13X.
Thank you very much.
Are you settling in your new place?
Yes, I'm very happy there.
Thank
very
God.
Happy, yeah.
Great.
It's been 6 months.
I was going to be a man.
I heard you the other day.
It's a boy.
It's a boy.
I tell you, it will be spoilt rotten. I just love babies anyway, and to think it's going to be a part of you, isn't it? It's a part of my daughter that was inside me. And now her child, oh, it's special. It's part of our family, so yeah.
Oh, now all your troubles start. No, all her troubles start.
No.
Yeah.
No, don't be silly.
Yeah.
I always swore when I had children I would have more than one, because people say, oh, you're so lucky not having brothers and sisters, but then it could be lonely. I was brought up by my mum. I had no dad. I've never had a dad.
You just said it's
her. So
I know, but I want to sit on there for the birth. I've got to be there forevermore.
I've always been in Pimlico all my life.
You'll be there forevermore now.
I had my son, which I brought up on my own, and I worked, done cleaning jobs, worked in shops, obviously hours to suit within, like, nursery. And then when I had my daughter, and she was planned, and I was with my partner, and we'd been together 3 years, then the father, her dad, walked out. So I thought, here we go again, I've done it once, I'll do it again. So then I brought her up on my own as well. So I brought them both up, and I'm very proud of myself for that, because they've not really done bad by it. There's no point letting things get you down.
All right, I don't know. What do you call Postman Pat when it's retired? I have
no
idea. Listen, I can't be that bad.
We
all keep coming to me.
No, we love it, because we are.
I'm always jolly, isn't I?
You are.
It's a life for me,
isn't it? Yeah, of course.
I mean, we have a thing when we get the bills, but we're doing your pay. But you have to still have to pay it, though.
Exactly.
I come here from 7 to 2.30. I'm either going to come here 7 to 2.30 and just serve cheese, and just serve cheese, and just serve cheese, or I'm going to spend 7 to 2.30 making friends, talking to people. And they do become friends. And I was doing this Saturday for my colleague Peter, and this young man came. He was about 24 years of age. And he said, oh, I haven't seen you before. Are you new? I said, no, I'm not new, but I don't work Saturdays. Oh, right. So he said, I want some dolce latte. I said, oh, well, you must. That's my favourite. Oh, is it? So now we're in communication, you see. He said, but that piece is too big. But it doesn't matter. I unwrap it and I'll cut whatever you want. Whilst I'm unwrapping and cutting the cheese, I'm telling him stories. So I'm telling these stories, and then he said, well, I have half that piece. And I weighed it, and he said, how old are you? It was a year ago, and I said, well, I'm going to be 74 next week. And he said, I'll tell you what, I'll take the other half. So I weighed the other half, put it into a bag, and he went off, and 20 minutes later, he was back at the counter. I said, oh, have you forgotten something? And he said, no, but I've spoken with the manager, and he said, it's all right doing what I'm going to do. I said, what's that? He said, the other half is my present for you. Now, I get upset, and I'd never mind getting upset. Barbara Cook sang a song written by her pianist, he's now dead, I Never Knew That Men Could Cry. So I don't mind, I'm in with them who can cry. And I get upset because I'd never met this young man before. And out of the blue, he did this for me, and possibly two cousins before that. Maybe they were rude to me. I don't know.
So on an evening, so at 10 o'clock, the majority of the day staff or evening staff have gone home, and then the night team come in. And they've got the shop to fill for the customers ready for the following morning.
There's always people in the store, although it's not customers. You know, you've got plenty of staff about, filling up shelves from all night long. They've got stories they can tell. So it's always someone to have a laugh and a chat and a joke with when you've got the time.
Hi, Mathan. You're right. What have you got planned for tonight?
After break, I do fill the crepes.
Yeah.
Do the water and promotion inside, yes.
You're doing the promotion then tonight, yeah? Getting them ready. Okay, okay then, yeah? You all right, yeah?
Yeah.
Good man,
yeah.
Good man.
If you went to see a show, the orchestra plays the overture and the curtain goes up and, it's, and then you get a little song and then you get a bigger song and then you get the chorus kind of for the interval and you go, wow! And then it all starts all over again.
No, I do. I love my job. Because every day is different.
You have people of all colours, all classes. You have the rich and the poor. We're all there for the same purpose. And we can just stick to that purpose alone, but we find that we're often challenged to move out beyond that. To engage with people at another level.
And there's loads of beauty. These are beautiful people. We don't all get on, and we can't all like the same things, but, boy, we're absolutely fabulous, aren't we? Anne Frank said, I do believe everyone is good at heart. Well, maybe some hearts you have to dig a bit deeper to find out. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and it's there if you want to find it.
You know, I always think there's something round the corner. It's got to get better. It can't get any worse. It gets better. I mean, I've struggled this month. It's been a killer. I mean, money-wise, I'm skint, brassy, but it's payday tomorrow, so hey, we're all right. That's what I mean, you know, always something comes up.
Supermarket Symphony, produced and composed by Nina Perry for Falling Tree Productions and BBC Radio 4. Send us your songs. Allegro, adagio, piano, or forte can all be sent to Resound at thirdcoastfestival.org.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, that's true. I've never been there.
Picture this. a Soviet musician standing on top of a building in Moscow in 1922, just 5 years after the October Revolution, the city at his feet. He's holding giant red and blue flags in his hands and is poised to conduct a symphony with the city. On this day, there's accidental music, cars going by, a parade passing through, and there's planned music, people waiting for their cue to sound Navy ship sirens, cannons, the foghorns of the entire Soviet flotilla in the Caspian Sea. The conductor on top of the building is an avant-garde and largely unknown musician, which prompted producer Charles Maines to find out more.
So here's what I know. In November of 1923, a man named Arseny Avramov will climb onto a rooftop in central Moscow. He will be holding two flags. But the day will be November 7th, and the Soviet Union, the USSR, will be celebrating its sixth anniversary, the birthday of the one and only Bolshevik Revolution. This man, Avramov, is a communist. He's also a composer of music. And there on this roof near the Kremlin, he will link the two with what might sound like a strange idea. He will conduct a symphony made up of an entire city. He will call this symphony the Symphony of Sirens. Let's be clear, this isn't his first time, but it will be his most important attempt so far, Soviet big leagues, so to speak. So this is what I know about Avramov. This is all I know, and I know what I know from a different man, the man I'm going to see now. His name is Andrei Smirnov. He is a man who studies these things, a man who writes about these things. He is a man who can answer what have clearly now become our common questions. Or so I thought. Even Smirnov said it was impossible to classify Avramov. He told me Avramov was from a Cossack family and had worked for the circus. He was a fountain of ideas, a ladies' man. And if he couldn't be pinned down in his personal life, it was even more so with his work.
In one sense, they call him a composer. Yes, he was a composer. He studied music for a few years. But I, like most people interested in Avramov, know very little about his music, because almost none of it survived. So you could say there was this split between his experiments, his ideas about the future of music, music that was never written down, and the music he made to survive, the music he made to make money. So to talk about what kind of music he wrote or would have written if that music would have survived, well, we just don't know. So yes, he's a composer, but he's a composer based on myth.
The myth in part was based on a flair for the dramatic. Early on, he'd nicknamed himself Rev Ars Avra, the revolution of Arseny Avramov. He had friends too, poets, engineers, musicians, cinematographers. In the first decades of the 20th century, they dreamed up ideas about the future. With the arrival of the revolution, Avramov and the others set out to turn them into reality, new art for a new world, with support, Smirnov told me, from the Soviet elite.
He had very strong support from on high. He had support from Trotsky. And as far as I know, Lenin supported him, or at least he tolerated it all. He tolerated this culture of crazes as part of creating this new future. These artists, avant-gardists and poets would teach the peasants and workers about the future of art.
Along the way, Avramov would develop far-reaching theories that would sketch out the concepts of electronic music, biomechanics, early use of sound in cinema. And then there was the Symphony of Sirens. Avramov's music of the future. The reason I'd come. Archival footage of parades from Red Square that day, November 1923, showed clear skies, a cold fall day. It was the first time, apparently, the Kremlin had been filmed from an airplane. Going through the tape, I couldn't find any evidence of Avramov. But the irony, Smirnov told me, was that the pilot may have been the only one who could make sense of Avramov's performance below.
На самом деле, в Москве это исполнение симфонии, мне кажется, осталось для многих даже незамеченным, потому что
the performance of the symphony went largely unnoticed because demonstrations were going on at the same time on Red Square. Airplanes were flying overhead, and most people probably didn't realize the sirens were their own event. Moscow is a big city, but even for the people who were there, the sound was so loud it blew them off their feet.
То есть поэтому, значит, исполнители ничего не понимали, ничего не
слышали. So the performers didn't understand. Those who were there to listen couldn't hear a thing. And nobody had even the slightest understanding of what was going on.
Представление о том, что случилось.
I'd learned one other detail that day. Although no recordings of the 1923 performance existed, a young composer in St. Petersburg had staged Avramov's symphony just a few years back. I bought a ticket and caught the first train out of town.
Это не маленькое пространство, да, но это ничтожное пространство по сравнению с тем, какое пространство использовал Авраам.
I tracked down Sergei Hislamov in the Peter Paul Fortress, where he'd played a recording of the sirens to an unsuspecting public. Hislamov told me that Avramov believed every city had its own symphony. For St. Petersburg, Sergei had constructed his version according to Avramov's own notes from the 1923 score.
Симфония гудков сохранилась в наказе, мы можем читать наказ, мы можем, в принципе, себе уже представить, даже примерно услышать в голове, если хорошо работает фантазия.
With the symphony of sirens, a detailed description remains. So we can read it and hear what it might have sounded like in our heads. It tells us the order of everything. When to turn on the sirens, when the cannons should fire, what should go after what. It's all spelled out and written down clearly. And it's obvious why Avramov did it this way. So that the symphony could be played not only by musicians, but by any person who knew how to read.
Kismadov spliced together sounds beginning with Avrama's so-called magistral, a set of steam whistle sirens constructed to play the workers' hymn, the Internationale. Then he added revolutionary choirs, then planes, horns, whistles, machine guns, more horns, soldiers. You get the idea. Collectively, they formed a sort of industrial hymn to Soviet achievement, with the city united as audience, performer, and stage. In Avramov's telling, the siren call to work, once so oppressive, had become something to celebrate in the workers' state. It was the music of the future, signaled by the cannon's roar.
Время он сам там стоял на вышке и флагами командовал, когда пушки стреляли.
During the performance of the sirens, Avramov was up on the rooftop with the flags, telling the cannons when to fire.
Раз, два.
One, two, three siren horns were to sound off after the firing of the first cannon, each siren a little different in tone. And then this triumphant sonar was to ring out for another 3 minutes, accompanied by bells.
3 минуты еще снова сонара.
It was loud, Hislamov conceded, and the sirens scared the tourists. We continued our walk around Peter Paul Fortress when, unexpectedly, we came across an exhibit for the American composer John Cage. An avant-garde artist who'd heard music and the sounds of the environment around him. To my mind, Cage was Avramov, born a few years later and with a different passport. The coincidence was odd. We entered and found Elena Nikolaevna. It doesn't move me, she said. In her view, Cage's biggest offense was his most famous work, 4:33, in which no notes are played for that duration. The song consists of whatever sounds are around you at that moment. Elena Nikolaevna had lasted 4 minutes before she gave up. Better they pay me 150 rubles, she said. I suggested there might be other American composers more pleasing to her tastes.
No, thank you, she said. Not if that meant more the likes of John Cage. But Cage's ideas weren't new, I mentioned. The Russian avant-garde had explored these same ideas in the 20s. Kismarov told her about Avramov's idea, about the Symphony of Sirens, the symphony for every city. Yes, she said, Petersburg sings. Our city is a symphony. As if it was the most obvious thing she'd ever heard. Back in Moscow, I found myself reviewing the archival tapes from Red Square again. I still couldn't find Avramov, but this time I was struck by something else, a simple idea, really. You can never go back to the beginning. The faces on Red Square that day were full of excitement for a new country. There were literally boys on bicycles. But soon they would grow up, go to war, and I couldn't help but think that many wouldn't return. For Avramov, November 1923 was the last time he would attempt his Symphony of Sirens. He didn't fall victim to the Soviet repressions, and he didn't die fighting the Nazis. According to Andrei Smirnov, Avramov and others from the avant-garde, they were just forgotten. The country grew up, and the wild ambitions of the 1920s gave way to Soviet officialdom, stagnation, and ultimately, cynicism.
Проблема в том, что большая часть публики просто не знает даже вообще о не только о существовании, но о самой вообще возможности существования вот чего-то подобного.
The problem isn't just that the majority of the public doesn't know about it. It's that they don't know that it even could exist. Russians were convinced long ago that the Soviet Union could not produce anything, that everything good was in the West, and all we could do was make bad copies of everything.
На самом деле это не так.
But it's not like that. And the history of the 20s and 30s really proves it. But this doubt that Russians have in themselves looms large. That's how we were raised. Hopefully, someday it will change.
Я надеюсь, что это все-таки хоть когда-нибудь, но изменится.
That night, fireworks rang out over cities all across Russia. It was a holiday. I'd almost forgotten. Avramov thought music was the ultimate communal experience, and it was hard not to agree. Here we all were, looking skyward at the drums. But if I closed my eyes and listened carefully, I could hear a car alarm, steps on pavement, laughter. Then I imagined other parts of the city chiming in, crowds gathered in protests, trains racing in the tunnels, Moscow's never-ending traffic. Just the hum and din of an average day in the city. You didn't have to like Avramov's music of the future to know it was happening. And if I couldn't find the man, well, it was comforting to know the music had never left.
Symphony of Sirens was produced by Charles Maynes. To hear more of his work, visit our website, thirdcoastfestival.org. Every symphony has its own character, mood, and feel, determined at least partly by the key it's written in. Canadian producer Paolo Pietropaolo has thought a lot about this and has gone as far as to ascribe a detailed list of personality traits to each key. Here's his loving, playful portrait of D minor, the Ice Queen.
No one can resist D minor's charms. She's sexy. And mysterious. There's a glint in her dark, sultry eyes. It's advisable to treat her with care, because she can turn on you in a split second. Nobody messes with D minor. She's beautiful, but dangerous. Like quicksilver, like ice. But spare a kind thought for her. D minor is very much alone. Her bleak history consumes her as she gazes out at a wintry landscape from the highest tower in her empty castle. She shivers, wrapped in velvet robes, trying to keep out the cold. She's been forsaken by everyone she loved. Whatever hope or innocence she once possessed has withered away. D minor is the saddest key. People weep instantly when they hear her story. For such a sweet maiden to have had her hopes and dreams so cruelly dashed by this pitiless world, now her heart is desolate. D minor is despondent, and she wants everyone to share in her misery. No one should be surprised at her vengeful streak. Hell hath no fury like D minor scorned. The world has betrayed her. And her wrath knows no limits. She will hunt you down, and she will show no mercy. So run, run away. D minor is coming for all of us. And she will stop at nothing. Until her revenge is complete.
D minor, the Ice Queen, was produced by Paolo Pietropaolo with Denise Ball for the Signature Series on CBC Music. Find links to The Mystic, F sharp major, The Handsome Rogue, E minor, or The Good Woman, A flat major, among others, at our website, thirdcoastfestival.org. Throughout the show, we've heard music composed from everyday objects, including typewriters from the Boston Typewriter Orchestra, a song composed from a single beep on a subway train by Ari Goldberg-Safer, and of course the classic Fugue in D minor played on wine glasses. Do you know of a good unconventional symphony? Send it to us at resound@thirdcoastfestival.org. We'll go out on a song composed completely of bicycle parts from Chicago's own Schwinn Tonation. ReSound is a production of the Third Coast International Audio Festival in Chicago. I'm Gwen Maxey. The program is produced by Katie Mingle and curated by Johanna Zorn and Julie Shapiro of the Third Coast Festival. Our intern is Maya Goldberg-Safer. You can hear today's program at thirdcoastfestival.org, where you can also hear hundreds of outstanding documentaries from around the world and subscribe to our podcast. Support for ReSound comes from Emma, a web-based email marketing and communication service helping businesses and nonprofits manage their email campaigns and online surveys in style. More at myemma.com. The Third Coast International Audio Festival is a nonprofit arts organization made possible with lead funding from the Richard H. Driehaus Foundation and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. Additional support is provided by the Agudino Foundation and the Menaki Foundation. The Third Coast International Audio Festival is supported in part by a grant from the Illinois Arts Council, a state agency. Special thanks to our many individual contributors from Chicago and around the world. The Third Coast Festival was founded in 2000 by WBEZ Chicago. If you want to contact us, we would love to hear from you. Email us at resound@thirdcoastfestival.org. You can also connect with us through Facebook and Twitter. ReSound returns next week with more radio that you can't hear anywhere else unless you live everywhere else.
You've been listening to the Third Coast Podcast. Stay connected with us through Facebook and Twitter, or by signing up for our email list at thirdcoastfestival.org. If you like what you heard today, consider writing us a review on iTunes or sending us a few bucks. As always, thanks for listening.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.